Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge in 2017.
Well, this is Tyler Orton, traveling through the Guardian of Forever, looking for maybe the possibly best year I've ever experienced when it comes to Star Trek.
Well, we can only hope. Tyler, how was your Christmas season?
It was good. What about yours, Cam?
I think it was pretty good. Did you get any good Star Trek merchandise over the Christmas holiday?
Yeah, I got some Blu-rays, and I was hoping for some or more of those vinyl pop figures, but Santa did not bring them, but it's all good. What about you?
Yeah, nothing for my family. They mostly got me Star Wars merchandise this year. And it was kind of a weird year just because of the funk of like Carrie Fisher passing on around Christmas.
Right.
Getting a lot of Star Wars merchandise. It was kind of a heavy time of joy and kind of sorrow. We talked about Carrie Fisher on our 2015 Fan Expo episode. And that was a tough one for me. I'm sure like many felt with Nimoy last year, similar emotions kind of going through me. But definitely passing of an icon who I think influenced a lot of Star Trek herself at a certain point of view, at least with the films. So that was kind of rough. But on Boxing Day, I went and bought the Roddenberry Vault.
How was that, Cam? Because I did not have much interest in it, but...
Really, you?
Yeah, but you tell me, because we've only maybe briefly exchanged some texts about it, but your overall thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I was kind of excited. As a huge fan of the original series, I really wanted to see what these kind of bits of footage were that they'd found and how they might change maybe some of the meanings of episodes. We've seen just from director's cuts of films how, you know, simple cuts can make a huge difference to tone or story or, you know, the what happens in a moment. And I was really looking for some of that from the Roddenberry Vault. And the way they'd market it was interesting in that I never had a complete idea of what this thing was. But I went and bought it. And I will say this. It comes with a number of documentaries, and they're really well put together. I think each one is really fascinating. And the main one takes up it's on all three discs, half an hour on each disc. Where they talk about the 12 episodes that are included in the collection. And there's a lot of the greatest hits, City on the Edge of Forever, Space Seed, etc., Metamorphosis. And they talk about each episode and what went into each one. And that stuff is just like crack for a original series fan. And in between, you know, they'll show footage that was cut and that they found on the Roddenberry Vault. You know, some of these moments have a huge impact. There's one for Who Mourns for Adonai, where they reveal the female love interest of the episode was pregnant with Apollo's child at the end. This was something that was cut by censors. I thought that was really fascinating. But what I didn't know when I bought the collection, and maybe just because I'm an imbecile, is the fact that they didn't actually put any of this footage back into the episodes, even just sort of loosely, so you could get an idea of context. They're just presented kind of scattered throughout this documentary.
They're like deleted scenes, essentially.
Yes, but just strewn throughout the documentary. You can't even watch them in a separate menu, kind of just isolated. You have to actually watch the, you know, hour and 40-minute documentary just to, like, watch these moments pop up sporadically, which I thought was interesting. There is a 20-minute feature where they have other cut scenes, but they're really, like, the snippets they couldn't even be bothered talking about. So, ultimately, you're left with this disc where you have, like, I don't know, 2.5 hours worth of documentaries that are really great for TOS fans, and then 12 episodes of the original series that are just rips straight from the Blu-ray collection. And in the future, how often are you going to go back and be like, I got to watch those 12 episodes on that one set, as opposed to just pulling out your TOS Blu-ray set?
Would you say it's worth the gift certificate that you used on it?
Yeah, for me, it didn't cost me anything because of the gift certificate. So sure, yeah, it's great if you can get it for free.
But otherwise, maybe skip it for even those hardcore fans?
I might wait until you can get it for like a $20 price, you know, like a $20, $25 price, because I would imagine it will drop at some point, because I think it's worth it just for fans for the documentaries. But I think, honestly, if they'd put out just those documentaries on a set, charge $25, $30, I wouldn't even question saying, yeah, buy it, it's worth it. It's throwing those extra episodes on and then charging $55. Then I go, well, hold on now.
Yeah, well, you know, speaking of digging through years from the past, Cam, what's our conundrum this week?
the best and worst years of Star Trek.
Well, this is kind of a fascinating exercise that we can engage in here.
You're just saying that because you came up with this topic.
Yes. Well, I always say that about my topics. But essentially, true. What we want to do is go through the years of Star Trek, and Cam and I, we're going to determine, for every decade, what was the best year within that decade, and maybe which was the weakest year when it comes to what Star Trek was producing. And I think we can really kind of dig deep into what the content was, what the big news of the time was, and just overall what overall fandom was like at that very moment. So this is a fun one to do research to. And literally, when I got to one particular decade, I tortured myself over the choices when I had to decide which was maybe the strongest year and what was the weakest year. But overall,
I think I can guess what decade that was. It's probably the same one I was tortured over.
Okay. Well, yeah. We can get into it maybe a little bit later. Unless, of course, that decade we're talking about is the 1960s, Cam.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that one, obviously, so many dark periods. This is the year Star Trek debuts. You can even give credit to 1964, which is when they shot The Cage.
Yeah.
Also, you know, there we go. It all starts there. But 66 is the year generally everyone thinks of with the birth of the original series on TV.
So if you go through, you know, the decade of 1960s, excluding, you know, say 1961, 1962.
Right.
Yeah. And so on. But from 66 onwards, Cam, what do you think was the strongest year for Star Trek?
This was really tough for me.
Was it? Okay.
It was, because
this is actually easy for me, but I want to hear it.
For me, it comes down to 66 or 67.
Okay.
66 is obviously you have the debut of Star Trek, and I mean, that's huge. You know, we're celebrating the 50 years, or we just, I guess, the 51 years now, but last year is the 50th. It all began from that day, from the day that the Man Trap hit TV. But the question is 66 the great year? Or are we looking more at maybe like 67 when, you know, a second season kicks in and you get those huge run of strong episodes, as well as the latter half of the first season when you have City on the Edge of Forever and some of the greats, Arena? So
see, I think you kind of talked yourself into what the answer is, why don't you tell me what your best year is, and I'll tell you what mine is.
Well, I think any year that has Charlie X is the greatest year of all time, so obviously 66. No, I think wow. I have to go with 67.
Yeah.
That's when the show really finds its feet. You're getting all of the great episodes, and then we fold into season two, which just, you know, a mock time. It's just the show at its best, and everything that when we look back on the original series, we're generally looking at that era.
See, this is not a decade I had to torture myself over. I went with 1967 as well. You have episodes in season one, like Space Seed, City on the Edge of Forever. Then you go into season two, you're getting Mirror Mirror, The Trouble with Tribbles, Doomsday Machine, Metamorphosis, all these just iconic, amazing episodes. And when you get into the next year, Cam, I think some you get Spock's brain.
Sure. I'm not totally against Spock's brain. But 68 is at least noteworthy because that's the year there's the big letter writing campaign that saves Star Trek, which is a huge momentous event that does change kind of the way fandom approaches studios.
Absolutely. And it's worth noting that because that is a very significant year.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think there's a lot to say about 68, but 67 is the year that, I mean, how do you... You can't sneeze in any of those episodes.
No, and also think about this. The reason why I initially thought, hey, you know, 66, that makes sense because that's when Star Trek debuts. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, you only get, what, like 10 or 12 episodes that aired that year versus, you know, the probably, what, 25-plus episodes that aired in 1967.
Right, and you're getting episodes in 66 like, you know, Man Trap, The Enemy Within, Charlie X. Like
Carbonite Maneuver.
That one's great.
Yeah.
But a lot of the ones
talking about the weaker... Yeah, yeah, when you said Charlie X, I thought you were talking about your favorite ones, honestly.
No.
You love Charlie X in like a campy laugh at it sort of way.
But I don't hold it up as one of the great all-time Star Trek hours.
Okay, well, I'm going to make that Charlie X face at you right now as my way of disagreeing.
Wait, but you weren't doing it already?
That's just my normal resting face, yes.
Okay. Resting Charlie X face?
Yes.
So, should we talk about what the worst year of the 60s was?
Okay, you got to share your pick first.
Okay, well, I think there's really only one choice for this one. That's 1969. Star Trek ends with Turnabout Intruder, an episode that will not go down in anyone's book. What do you think fans prefer as a final episode of a series, this or These Are the Voyages from Enterprise?
I would have to say Turnabout Intruder, if only because it did not betray this series so much. I think by season three, people were kind of used to the more mediocre quality that they're getting week to week. But These Are the Voyages just felt like such a betrayal of the characters and the series in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this sees the end of the Fred Freiberger era of TOS, the season three that has some great episodes mixed into it, but it's definitely, it didn't end strong.
Yeah.
And it didn't really end in a way where you could, it's interesting that fans were still want to fight so hard for it when it ended, because a lot of people would look at it like, you know, Arrested Development was a beloved show for three seasons. Came back for season four on Amazon, or sorry, on Netflix. I don't know that fans are as passionate about bringing it back now.
Yeah, not compared when it had been canceled prematurely. I absolutely agree.
Right, whereas Star Trek comes close to getting canceled after one and two, comes back for a three that most fans were not as crazy about. But the fever didn't go away.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the fever that was going on, and I was living in it when Firefly was canceled.
Right,
and
yeah.
Huge campaigns. People were sending in knitted Jane caps to studio executives, and we ended up getting a movie out of that. And the movie kind of bombed, and say what you will, I thought Stardew was a fine movie, but it didn't quite capture lightning in the bottle like the series did, in my opinion.
I just remember there was all the press around it, because at this point I hadn't watched Firefly. Yeah. And there was all this press about how this was the next Star Wars / Star Trek.
Okay.
And it was like, well, maybe. They really hyped it, though. They were like, you know what? This happened to Star Trek. It's going to happen to Firefly.
Yeah.
It's going to be a new phenomenon that takes over the world.
Okay. You don't know how deflated I was when I saw the $11 million opening weekend. I was just like, oh.
Yeah.
And I was misled because I went on opening night at the theater where people literally were wearing brown coats and everything. Yeah. So I thought, hey, this has hit all over it. It's a sold out show. But anyways, I digress. So I agree. 1969, I think that's the weakest year of the decade for Star Trek.
There is a bit of an asterisk to 69, though, which is that this is also the year that Star Trek goes into syndication, which would pave the way for kind of the brightness to follow.
But if you had to pick between 66, 67, 68, 69, you're going to probably say 69.
Yeah, the grim year.
Yeah, okay. This is going to be a fascinating exercise as well, because we're going into the 1970s, which I think is a pretty grim decade if you are a Star Trek fan looking for new content. I think on one hand, you've got the fandom scene blowing up with conventions.
Yeah.
The actors attending those conventions, literature, fan literature, your favorite cam, or as you call it, cam fiction.
Of course.
You know, but you even have like the arrival of the animated series.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's still a bit of a desert when it comes to even having hope for seeing Star Trek in live action ever again.
Yeah, to me, the 70s is really like a transition era for what the franchise is. The 70s is the era where fandom of Star Trek is really born, comes out of that syndication. And, you know, yes, you have the first convention in 1972. You also have in 1974, the first Star Trek toys launched by Mego. So it's like the original, you know, five figures where it's like Kirk, Spock, Salt Vampire, but it's not called Salt Vampire. It's called like Space Vampire, and it looks like Baylock. You know, it's like those early days of officially licensed merch were really shaky.
Yeah.
But, you know, and then
there's only quality merch nowadays, Cam.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we get the animated series, which in many ways feels almost like a fan production, even though it is an official production.
Right.
It doesn't feel like something made with at the height of creative powers. It feels like this is here for the fans to kind of keep them tided over. And, you know, the decade ends well with, you know, kind of the promise of the franchise going forward. But, you know, it doesn't feel like a decade that's built around a healthy franchise.
And I think maybe a lot of fans thought that this was just going to be it. It was kind of a cult series that's still in syndication, you know, but that's it for it. People didn't know it was going to explode into what it is nowadays. So my pick for best year in 1970s would be 1979, because you do have the premiere of Star Trek, the motion picture. What's your pick for best year, though, Cam?
I also agreed 1979, the motion picture.
Yeah.
In an alternate universe, it might have been 77 when they announce Phase 2.
Yeah.
But 77 is also the year they announced that Phase 2 is not going to happen.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, could you imagine how, you know, fans must have felt at that time, you know, like for almost a decade, like just yearning for more Star Trek on television?
Do you think they were more excited, and we're going to get to the 80s later, but do you think they were more excited for the announcement of Phase 2 or for the announcement of TNG? Because TNG was, there was a lot of concern about, you know, a new crew.
I think they must have been more excited for Phase 2 because it would have had the return of at least, you know, William Shatner.
Right.
Not one Leonard Nimoy, but the vast majority of the crew.
Do you think that Phase 2, say Season 1 Phase 2, would have turned out better than Season 1 TNG?
Hmm. No, we also know that there's a lot of recycled scripts.
Yeah.
So
the child would have been the premiere.
Honestly, I honestly think that it would have been so much cheesier.
Mm-hmm.
And that's saying something, just even because production values, you know.
70s like, aesthetic would not have been kind to Star Trek.
Yeah. So I think Phase 2 would have, Season 1, Phase 2 would have been a disaster.
Yeah.
You know. What when it comes to worst year of the 1970s, though,
mm-hmm.
I think it must have been a very, very hopeless period right from the gate. You know, 1970. There's right. no Star Trek on TV. There's not even an animated series. I don't think that was the first convention in 71 or 72.
72.
72. So you don't even have Star Trek conventions going on. All you have yeah. is syndication at that point. So that's why I put 1970 as the worst year in Star Trek.
I did
for
it
1970s.
For 70s. I didn't because I figured at this point the syndication is really beginning to steamroll. And so there's a lot of people coming to the party late and catching up on it and getting excited about it at that point in time. So I didn't say that. I thought maybe 1974, which is the year the animated series goes off the air, because at this point, all that people had to hold on to
that,
is gone.
That's why I made it my number two year, the second best year. Yes, the animated series is finally gone.
I figured once that goes off the air, there's nothing for fans to hold on to. It's like, yeah. we only had this, which is kind of like the cheap bargain basement version of what Star Trek could be. And it can't even stay on the air more than like a second full season.
So
like,
this is it. This is our first divergence so far this evening. Okay. Well, let's fast forward to the 1980s, Cam. I want to know from you, your first pick for what's the best year in the 1980s? Because this is when I first had to oscillate between picks. And I went to one year first, and then I ended up landing on another year instead.
Right.
But you tell me, because here's the thing, because we could get into arguments about is it the quality of the product or is it the sheer volume of the product being produced?
Right.
So you take it away, sir.
For me, I think the obvious choice that people would jump to is 1982 with Wrath of Khan.
Yep.
I didn't choose that. And I would be actually really curious to meet someone who went to see the 1979 motion picture comes out. It's a big deal, makes a lot of money. No one likes it.
Right.
In 1980, 81, are people depressed? Like, are they like, well, that franchise is dead? Or is there just kind of like, well, I'm sure they'll make another one. I don't know. I don't know anyone from that era that I could talk to.
But think about it, because in 1980, you would have been looking at the box office receipts.
Yeah.
So I think there's still hope that they're going to continue on with this franchise because it made a pile of money.
Yeah, I just wonder if, you know, all you hear is stories about people like being bored stiff by it. So like, yeah. did they even want more at that point? That's what's curious to me.
I have to be honest, I don't think they wanted more 1979 Gene Roddenberry vision.
Yeah.
You know,
the human adventure.
The human adventure, of course. Yeah. Okay. So, but what would you say then is the best year?
I think the best year is 1986.
Okay.
The Voyage Home comes out. It's not your or my favorite movie, but it is a huge hit across the board, makes a massive amount of money, and is like kind of like the feel-good, fun Star Trek blockbuster that fans and the general public really want. I mean, Wrath of Khan is by far a better movie, but financially, the mainstream public jumped on board for Voyage Home in a big, bad way. They did not for Wrath of Khan. And then you also, that same year, you have the announcement that TNG is coming.
Yes.
Obviously, you know, a lot of fans are not too happy about it, but it's at least the promise of more Star Trek. And also that year, this is sort of a weird side note, is that's also the year that Shatner goes on Saturday Night Live and makes that skit, you know, saying get a life to Star Trek fans. So it's a big year for pop culture for Star Trek.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know.
I actually did consider 1986 for a little while. That's why I said that I was oscillating. And because I think maybe news of Next Generation gave people hope. People loved The Voyage Home as well.
Yeah.
I ended up having to just go with Tyler Fields. And I say 1982. When you get a film like The Wrath of Khan and you think about the possibility of where Star Trek can go from there, I think that's
Search for Spock.
Well, they didn't know at the time that they'd be getting Search for Spock. Yeah. But it fills me with this kind of idea like, wow, there's so many more possibilities for Star Trek going forward at this point.
David Marcus.
Killing him off. Yeah. but it's so easy to do in retrospect because you can say, oh, well, you know, that's a phenomenal movie now. Do you think at the time it took a while? How many movies do you think they had to build up before it was just, without any sort of question that Wrath of Khan is going to be the one to have to beat?
I don't know.
Because I think it's so different from the motion picture. It's so hard to compare those two.
Yeah, and it made considerably less than the motion picture, too.
But then you have The Voyage Home comes out, and then I bet a lot of people, it's such a crowd pleaser, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's better than The Wrath of Khan.
It's so hard for me to know, because I was too young at that age to be cognizant of what was going on. I'm curious how much of Wrath of Khan's legendary status comes from opening in 1982 and playing in theaters versus being seen on TV over the years.
I think it has a lot more to do with the latter, just kind of the reputation that it's gained over the years. Mm-hmm. So, honestly, I really don't think there's a film that really made a run at kind of the top Star Trek film for another 14 years when First Contact came out, you know.
Well, among hold fans. Hold on, Tyler. Let's not forget my runner-up for best year, 1989, when The Final Frontier comes out.
I actually put an asterisk next to 1989 because just content-wise, you mm-hmm. have, seasons 2 and 3 of Star Trek The Next Generation, plus you have The Final Frontier. For fans, that must have been, at least in January 1st, people would have been looking forward to what the rest of the year has in store for it.
But they would have been very excited because, you know, this is the follow-up to The Voyage Home.
Yes.
So it's like, what amazing things could happen next.
Yes. Honestly, I still contend that you listeners out there, give Final Frontier another look with an open mind. It's not nearly as bad as everyone says. And it's to me, it's a bit of a guilty pleasure.
It has merits. It's funny, though, when you look at the box office of Voyage Home compared to Final Frontier. It's like, I don't think you would ever have that situation happen now, where a movie is that beloved, but the follow-up is that much of a box office bomb. Yeah. I think there would be enough carryover to make it at least modestly profitable. Like, they literally went from, like, smash hit blockbuster to, like, crappy money.
Yeah, it's curious just how things have changed so much over the decades.
Yeah, because, you know, look at the 2009 movie, right? The J.J. Abrams movie. Like, comes out beloved in a big way. Beloved. And, you know, Into Darkness, much more polarizing. Maybe not as hated as Final Frontier at all, but makes equally good money.
Yeah.
If not better money, at least internationally.
Absolutely.
So, you know, even though it's a movie that many fans find disappointing, still does really well. It's not like it's that one suddenly dropped to, like, $25 million box office.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, it was the highest grossing film that Star Trek's ever done. So I'm kind of surprised that we didn't get more out of Star Trek Beyond when it comes to the box office. And I honestly think this reputation of Star Trek Into Darkness as being a bad film, it's really only one that fans hold on to, not general audiences. That actually did quite well with critics.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm genuine. But this is, Cam, 2016 was such a weird year for films.
Yes, it was.
So I can't really explain why Star Trek Beyond did not do so well, but I think you and I, we both kind of figured that just the marketing was pretty weak. I'd say that's the most PC way to put it.
I wonder how word of mouth on it was for the generals, too, because, like, you know, like, my sister and her boyfriend watched it the other night, and I asked what they thought, and they both said, it was good.
Yeah, which is pretty much what I thought, too.
Yeah, like, they enjoyed it. They had good things to say, but neither of them was over the moon. Like, I listened to them, you know, give raves about other movies this year where maybe not wouldn't stand out as, like, great movies of 2016, but delivered to what average moviegoer would want far more than maybe Beyond did.
And see, maybe that's kind of the issue that I had with the film, that it did not hit the low lows that we've seen in the Star Trek film franchise, but it didn't quite hit those high highs either. And I ended up ranking it, you did as well, at number 5.
Yeah.
So it's very much still a middling movie.
Right.
So, yeah. But I digress. Obviously, you and I maybe don't see eye to eye about the best year of the 1980s, but how do you feel about the worst year? What's your pick for the worst year of the 1980s?
I found this year very, very difficult to pick a worst because there's consistent Star Trek product on the horizon, essentially. So I really kind of am just going to cheat and say I think probably 1980 81. When?
No, 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 no.
Oh, I have to nail it,
dude,
down.
Dude, like, seriously.
Okay, okay. I'll say 1980 then. Because I'll say the year right after the motion picture comes out. Fans, I have to feel like their confidence in Star Trek being a big screen entity was maybe a little shaken just by the fact they didn't like it that much. And I'm sure Star Wars overshadowed it a lot in terms of quality. And so they haven't yet announced Wrath of Khan. 81 is probably when they announced Wrath of Khan. So maybe at that point they're back on board. But 1980 must have been a kind of a weird year because you have the aftermath of the motion picture. But you also have in 1980 Empire Strikes Back coming out and being so much infinitely better.
Sure.
That being like, well, maybe Star Trek is dead. I don't know.
You know, I did briefly consider 1980, but then I thought a lot of fans had not made it out. Because, of course, Star Trek Motion Picture is released late in the year, December.
Yeah.
A lot of fans, and this is not during a period of time where movies were released, you know, 2,000, 3,000 screens all at once. It was like very slowly rolled out. I don't think a lot of fans actually made it out to see the motion picture until 1980. So
right.
A lot of fans actually got to see that, whereas the following year, 1981, there's no content for them to see.
Yeah.
They may have gotten the announcement of Wrath of Khan, but it's after watching the motion picture, how excited do you think they were for the Wrath of Khan?
That's the question. So we both basically have the exact same idea. We just come down on different years.
I went with 1981, you went with 1980.
Yeah.
Okay. So I kind of teased it at the start of the show, Cam, but this is the decade that really tortured me.
Yeah, me too.
1990s, because, look, we have running Star Trek The Next Generation, Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Star Trek Voyager, four films are released. Honestly, I could go through any one of the years between 1990 and 1991 and declare that one the best year, and yep. I think I would have totally valid arguments to make. Cam, I was actually... I still haven't decided, so I'm going to make you go first, and I'll try to do my best, because I have so many arguments for why one year is better than the other, and then I keep going back on it, so let's hear your answer here.
So, okay, I have three highlighted as the best, so I'm going to try to kind of, I'm going to have an answer as to which is the best as I kind of talk through these three. So, you know, in 93, you have...
You're such a cheater, Cam.
I know I am. In 93, you have Next Gen on the air in its kind of prime period of time where people are huge on board. You also have the launch of Deep Space Nine. Fans are very excited for that, so that's a big time. The next year, you have the wrap-up to TNG, which is epic. You know, All Good Things is one of the great hours of Star Trek. Or 2 hours, I guess, in that case. You have Generations coming out, which is so exciting. And you also have Voyager announced, which, again, you know, hey, the next great Star Trek series. I'm sure Chakotay's going to be the character I fall in love with. And then in 96, you have, obviously, Deep Space Nine still on the air, Voyager on the air. You know, we're prime, rich in the Kes era. And you also have huge, massive amounts of conventions. So, and then First Contact. So that's a huge year, too. So it's so hard for me to figure out which one.
Okay, I'll just say this, though. I'm not giving away anything about my own picks, but those 3 years that you actually mentioned, they're all three of them that I actually considered for the worst year.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, well, maybe because I wasn't a fan at this point in time, so...
You still barely are, so...
I know, it's pathetic. So I think the era I'm going to go with is 1993, which is when TNG is flying on all cylinders. You're getting just like great episode after great episode after, you know, I don't know, maybe like some of those unfortunate Troy episodes followed by another great episode. But you also have Deep Space Nine coming out. And I just remember I'm really taking a lot of this off the atmosphere on the playground for me in, you know. Was I in high school at that point? No, I was in elementary school. It's okay. We still had a playground. But
so creepy. The high schooler hanging out in the monkey bars.
But I just remember my all my friends being so excited for Deep Space Nine. They're, you know, just absolutely in love with TNG at this point. Like, it's the franchise is exploding in a way they've never seen before, where they're going to have a second Star Trek show on the air. And that optimism is just massive. So I'm kind of going with that era.
But let me ask you this, Cam.
Mm.
It's not the anticipation, but, okay, what episodes of Deep Space Nine from that era, 1993, stand out to you as real good ones? I'd say Duet.
Yeah, Duet.
And?
The pilot was a big deal. A really big deal.
It was a big deal, but was it one of the great Star Trek, you know, 2 hours, two-parters?
Yes.
Emissary? You could not even... You have a Charlie X face on right now.
To me, though, it was the excitement in the air of that period where, like, that excitement did not come back in a way where at least I visibly saw it except for, I'd say, with First Contact coming out.
So it's interesting how, like, you're going about kind of just gauging how people are feeling at the time.
Right.
But, like, I'm thinking about, like, content-wise, because you have, you know, season six of Star Trek Next Generation, the last half of it. You got some episodes like Aquial in there. I mean, there's some good episodes.
Like I said, the greats. Yeah.
Some good episodes in season six, last half of season six of Next Gen for sure. But then you get into season seven of Star Trek The Next Generation. I think the only one in the first half of season seven that I thought was actually like a good notable one was Parallels.
Right.
Beyond that, there's a lot of just forgettable episodes. You know, Descent parts one and two, they're okay.
I like Descent one and two.
Yeah. But really, and then Deep Space Nine season two, it didn't really come like swinging out of the gates or anything like that either.
No. No, it didn't. But
you do have the introduction of one Vedic Brile in 1993.
That's also why I picked 93.
Yeah.
I have to also be fair and say, like, I feel like more of my friends at the time who were Star Trek fans were watching Deep Space Nine its first two seasons than were watching when it actually got good.
Okay.
So there was a lot more excitement. I remember.
But does that make it the best year of the 1990s?
From my point of view, okay, of being in that era, yes.
Okay. Now,
but again, mine is kind of from the point of view of watching kind of society around me. You know, my high school, elementary school society around me.
Okay. Well, Cam,
I'm interested more from your point of view, because I think my perspective, say, on the last decade is far more fan-oriented,
yeah,
than the 90s was when I wasn't.
I have to go from it from the angle of, what if I was trapped on a desert island? What year would I want to relive again and again when it comes to Star Trek?
93, The Birth of Brile.
Well, what would be my second choice after The Birth of Brile?
When did The Traveler come around? No, that was the 80s. The Return of the Traveler, some point?
So, okay, so this is what I ended up... I'm still going back and forth on all of this.
It was tough, huh?
Yeah, this is what I finally decided, though. And this really... I may change my mind tomorrow, but I felt confident that I was going to go with this one before you arrived to record, and I'm still sticking with this particular choice.
Yeah.
1997. So this is when we have, for Star Trek Deep Space Nine, it's the last half of season five and the first half of season six.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that Dominion War arc going on, but preceding that, you have some real standout episodes. You've got, like, Children of Time, which, of course, is when Odo reveals his feelings to Kira. That's just such a... Deep Space Nine doesn't really do high concept that much, but when they do, it was such a phenomenal episode. You also have Dr. Bashir, I presume, Empok Nor, Darkness and the Light, For the Uniform with Eddington and revealed as the Maquis Mole.
Yeah.
You know, and these are not considered, like, some of the... great, great episodes. I'm just using examples of, like, some of the kind of, this is kind of cool,
mm-hmm,
you know, and this is just them running on kind of like, middle gear, so to speak. When they're hitting up to high gear and you have the Dominion War arc going on, you've got fun episodes like You're Cordially Invited. Deep Space Nine is doing just, I think they're at their peak at that point.
Right.
So, okay. You got Deep Space Nine. I think it's at its peak, and Deep Space Nine is my favorite Star Trek series.
Of course.
Voyager, though, if I'm trapped on a desert island, it's not enough to have just one great series. Why not another okay series? You know, Voyager, it's on record, not my favorite Star Trek series, but you have a lot of great episodes going on in that particular year, 1997. You have one of my favorite Neelix episodes of all, Fair Trade, in which Neelix has to look for a map.
Best era, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
At least Voyager. But then you also have Before and After, which it's that Kes time travel episode. And that's really proving that she could have been, like, a great character if they stuck with her. And then they ended up, gifting her.
Yeah.
Which is very unfortunate. But then you have, of course, Scorpion, Scientific Method, which I think is a fun kind of high concept episode. You got Year of Hell, which is not my favorite, but it's one of those episodes that I know a lot of fans are big into. So I think 1997, it's not the most notable year, the one that fans are immediately going to jump on. I think most fans are going to jump on either 1994 or 1996 because that, you know, but I think from a pop culture standpoint, I think 1994, not 93, but I think 94 is when Star Trek was at its peak. But Cam, I don't know. I can feel you just, like, bugging to say something right now.
Well, no, I mean, I agree with you in terms of the content produced in that era. But to me, I guess the way I approached it was trying to get in kind of the mindset of a fan at that point.
I'm a fan in this point.
Sure, looking back at it. But I'm like, yeah. In that point in time, am I excited for Star Trek with TNG off the air? Because so many of the fans I know in my life, you know, didn't really carry off of TNG into DS9 and Voyager the way that, you know, that we obsess over those shows, or, you know, the fans we meet at the conventions did. And so I'm like very interested to know, like,
you're thinking more like from mainstream audiences.
Yeah, I'm just
but
curious
to,
like,
me, that doesn't make it the best year.
I guess that's the way I looked at it, though. Like, what was the best year for Star Trek fans? What were they the most excited about? And I can only, like, try and mentally go back in time to that point and, you know, and try and figure it out. But that's kind of the way I tackled it, because
I just think about all the content that was being produced in 1997. Yeah. And I'm just like, wow. Like, I remember I was running a Star Trek Voyager website at the time. I didn't even know how good I had it back then.
Yeah, I know. It's just like the feeling in the air. I was trying to figure out of how fans felt with, you know, TNG off TV at this point. And I just remember reading editorials at the time.
Well, sorry, you keep saying with TNG off TV. Do you mean 1997?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. By that point, sorry. Right, yeah. Okay. But, you know, post when the show goes off the air in 94. Like, how's the attitude for fans then? Are they still excited about Voyager and stuff like that? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, audiences were dwindling. But to me, that's such a quantitative thing as opposed to a qualitative thing. And
sure.
I have to just think about, if I'm on a desert island, what year do I want to relive again and again? Like, it's Groundhog's Day.
I just remember, too, reading editorials. And I was, again, not a fan at that point. But I remember all these editorials for people just, like, bitching and moaning about the Berman stranglehold over the franchise, which is something that I've never been able to kind of really understand coming to it later.
Right.
But it's something at the time I just remember reading so much anger about.
It wasn't in, you know, later on, it wasn't just Berman, but it was the Berman Braga stranglehold.
Right, yeah.
But you're right, though. People just, you know, you and I were both going through, you know, Blu-ray extra, like, special features and everything. And it's interesting to even, like, listen to, like, the composers, for example, like Jay Chataway, Dennis McCarthy, Ron Jones, complaining about Rick Berman as well. So that guy, he definitely had his influence for a long, long time when came to Star Trek.
Berman, it was the best of times and the worst of times. So should we talk about what the worst years were in the 90s?
I've got maybe a somewhat controversial year picked out, but I want to hear from you, Cam. What your pick for the worst year?
Well, for me, like, the worst year of Star Trek in the 90s really... It's tough because there's so much content being produced that how are you not excited for Star Trek?
But I know. Like, to me, you could point to any one of those numbers and I would call it the worst, and somebody would say, are you an idiot?
Yeah.
And I'd have to say, well, yeah, I am an idiot, but
that's
beside the point.
Yeah, I'm a Star Trek podcaster. What do you expect?
Yeah.
So, I mean, for me, the worst year really comes to 1999. It must have been exciting going in. You had Insurrection coming out. And then, you know, it's kind of like the Final Frontier following the voyage home. We go from the big hit of First Contact to Insurrection coming out and making like $63 million and no one liking it. And then, you know, you have DeForest Kelly dying that year. That's pretty heavy for fans. You know, he's kind of the first of the real beloved Star Trek icons to die. There is kind of a...
You think about Star Trek and the themes of mortality. It's really hitting home there.
Yeah, exactly.
And with the release of course, Star Trek Insurrection and the Fountain of Youth, it hits even harder.
Exactly. Yeah. And then there is the lone bright spot, which is TOS, is released on DVD. So there's at least now we're seeing home video is bringing Star Trek, you know, even in the best format at that point, into your home, which is something. So I'd say 1999, it's not as grim and dark as like some of the other years we looked at, but it's definitely a downer year.
So this is a pick that also tortured me, not to the degree that picking the best year did, but I strongly considered two particular years. And the first one that I'll mention, very controversial, 1994.
One of my runners up for best?
Well, yeah, because you have the release of Star Trek Generations, which you and I both agree is perhaps the worst Star Trek film ever released.
Yeah.
And so then you also have Deep Space Nine going on in seasons 2/3.
The Maquis, two-parter.
Look, there's some strong entries for those. Jem'Hadar, The Search, Parts 1 and 2. But look, Deep Space Nine is still finding itself.
Yeah.
You also have the end of Star Trek Next Generation. Mm-hmm. And while All Good Things is a good episode, you have some good episodes in there like Lower Decks.
Genesis.
Genesis, you know. Cam, there's some real stinkers, like the one where Worf's brother shows up out of nowhere.
My favorite episode.
Yeah. So 1994, look, it's not the strongest when it comes to the content, even though
you have the announcement of Voyager. I mean, that's something. There is sort of that, oh, we're getting another series. Well, maybe, you know, maybe if DS9's not great at this point, there's at least some optimism about Voyager, maybe.
I'm not going to go on my desert island and relive, like, looking at the news of Voyager and saying, oh, that's a damn fine year.
I remember, though, the casting of Janeway was a big deal. I think that might have been the first issue of Entertainment Weekly I ever got when I became a subscriber.
That doesn't mean it's the greatest year in Star Trek, because Entertainment Weekly did a feature on Kate Mulgrew.
My point is, though, that was a big deal.
Oh, yeah, no doubt it's a big deal. And look, I think pop culture-wise, Star Trek had never been bigger.
Yeah.
You have Captain Kirk and Captain Picard on the cover of Time magazine.
Right.
You know, it's crazy what's going on. I think Quark was in like a Hawaiian t-shirt on the cover of TV Guide. Like, you know, it's just crazy what was going on during that period. But I think, look, you've got episodes like Sub Rosa, Masks, Journey's End.
I thought you said this was your worst pick.
for Deep Space Nine, you have episodes like Meridian, Fascination. It's kind of a weak barrel, but it's not my worst pick, Cam.
Fascination is a Brile episode, so it's not all bad.
No, that's true. But look, I got to go with you. I think you're when you're right, Cam, you're right. 1999. Even though content-wise, you have the final arc of Deep Space Nine. It's tough for me to put 1999 in there, but look, Deep Space Nine is coming to a close. It just, maybe 12, 13 episodes maybe aired that year, so just content-wise. And it'll be fascinating when we go back and examine all the premieres and the finales, because what you leave behind is a very satisfying finale, but it did not blow me away the same way that All Good Things does.
Right. I mean, to me, I really love it a lot, and I think it ends the series perfectly, maybe with one more magical book than I would have liked. But sure.
See, I feel tortured picking 1999, if only because you have so many standout Deep Space Nine episodes in that year. But, man, you also have episodes of Voyager, like Bride of Chaotica.
Right.
Think Tank, your favorite, The Fight.
Yeah, and in 1999, I have to believe fans weren't, you know, the ones that were still hanging on, weren't, like, that enamored with Voyager.
Yeah.
They may have liked it and watched it week to week, but I don't think the vast majority were like, this is as good as TNG in its prime.
Yeah.
So.
All right, sir. Now we're getting into another bit of a valley when it comes to content.
The 2000s. Throw on your blue-gray filters.
It's all chrome, baby.
Yeah.
All right. So, you know what? I'll let you go first the last two decades. I'm going to go first for this particular decade.
Okay.
I think for me, and I have to go again from my perspective, I'd become oversaturated with Star Trek by the early aughts.
Right.
And I just was not feeling the franchise anymore. And I for the first time in more than a decade, I stopped watching Star Trek week to week. I had given up on Enterprise by the end of season 2/beginning of season 3.
Right.
And I wish I stuck through with it, because just very recently, I went back and rewatched season 3, or watched for the first time all of season 3 and all of season 4, and those are two of my favorite seasons of Star Trek ever. Mm-hmm. You know, so but if I have to go back and pick what the best year was, I would have to say I had never been so invigorated by the franchise in a decade as when I walked out of the theater from watching Star Trek, the 2009 J.J. Abrams film. Like, yeah. To me, and that movie still holds up. I think you and I might put it at, what, number 3 on our top 10 list of Star Trek films?
Yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah. So I think it's a great film. I know
I think it was my number 2, actually.
Above the motion picture?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was just above motion picture. I think it went motion picture was number 3.
Okay. Well, there you go. So you're an even bigger fan of it. I know it's like a real easy bullseye kind of target for a lot of like hardcore fans, but that's a good film. And I think it stays true to the characters. And I never felt so excited for Star Trek in almost a decade at that point. So to me, that's why 2009 gets my vote.
Yeah, for me, I got to agree with you. 2009, yeah. That movie comes out and it just blows up sort of what Star Trek could be going forward. Like, I think, I don't know that the idea was wiped from my mind that Star Trek could continue being in movies. It just never felt like something that was that exciting.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, they may make more. I saw Nemesis. It was okay.
Yeah.
You know, but do I really care? No. And then that movie comes out, and I mean, I was just at that point getting into the original series. So there was kind of excitement for it was starting again. And that movie comes out, blows me away. And all I can think about for the next couple years is, what are they going to do next? You know, the sky's the limit. This franchise is primed to be like, kind of like Bond in 2006 with Casino Royale. It is primed to once again be bigger than ever before, possibly. And so, yeah, 2009 is so exciting. It's also the year TOS comes to Blu-ray. And TOS, if you see it on Blu-ray, is one of the most beautiful things ever. So it's just a very exciting time for sort of the classic adventures of Kirk and Spock being brought back into, you know, the late 2000s.
Yeah, and maybe this kind of leads me into the dearth of Star Trek throughout that decade.
Yeah.
I think the low point had to be 2006, because at least in 2005, you are getting at least some Star Trek content there.
I wildly disagree with you.
Okay.
Because in 2006, the animated series comes to DVD.
Okay.
Do you want to rethink your answer now?
I was actually going to note that the only thing that really of note that happened in 2006 was that TOS was digitally remastered.
Right.
And so you get new special effects and all that. But other than that,
yeah,
that's all you got for Star Trek. At least subsequent years, you have news in 2007 that they're working on a new Star Trek film.
Right.
They were doing the production in 2008. It was released in 2009. 2005, look, say what you want about These Are the Voyages, horrible finale, but there's a lot of great episodes that were released in 2005. Mm. Just 2006, I was done with Star Trek, essentially, and which isn't to say that I was not a fan of the series that had come before, but I just did not know what my relationship would be with the series, with the franchise going forward, because it just didn't really, it seemed dead at that point. So
yeah.
I don't know, Cam, what's your pick for worst year?
So I almost went with the year Nemesis comes to theaters, and just, I mean, my God, if we're going to talk about Star Trek movies that bomb, I mean, no one cared at all about this movie.
Yeah.
Like, this was a real sign that this franchise was done in terms of movies. And so that comes out. But you also had sort of the glimmer of, like, TNG finally hits DVD. And TNG, while it's not my favorite of the series, as I've said many, many times before, that's the one that fans, I think, nowadays would look back as their favorite. And so people bringing TNG home is a big deal and kind of keeps it going for, you know, up until now and beyond. So that's a big deal.
Star Trek Beyond.
Yes, yes. So for me, I considered that, but ultimately I decided, you know what, you still have at least Enterprise on the air. There's still Trek on the air. I went with 2005. That's the year Enterprise ends. Again, you talk about how great the content was for that year. Yeah, it was. I didn't really take that too much into account. I thought more about the perception at the time, because I know at the point, no one cared about Enterprise. Like,
yeah,
it's a show that's
true.
Really gained fandom.
No, you say that, but there was a huge fan effort to get the series going again. They wanted a season 5. There's talks.
Yeah.
There's a lot of money raised, actually, very controversially.
Right.
You know, so there were fans still.
There were fans, but just the excitement for the franchise was not there, despite me being told by Entertainment Weekly that Enterprise was making Star Trek sexy again.
Yeah.
So, you know, in 2005, it goes off the air, and it must have felt, I mean, you can probably answer better than I can, like the death knell of Star Trek on TV for a while.
Oh, yeah. And I think, honestly, I was kind of relieved. I really thought at the time that Star Trek needed to take a break, find just some new creative shepherd to bring it back and get it going again. You know, but all right, Cam.
Well, this is all, I was also going to say, 2005 is also your Jimmy Doohan dies. So again, you have the last of the televised Star Trek's going off the air. one of the most beloved Star Trek icons dying. It's kind of like, well, what's left, guys? You know.
Well, let's jump ahead to the decade we're in right now, the 2010s. Yeah. This is a little interesting, but Cam, what would be your pick for the best year so far in the past 6 years that we've lived in this decade?
It's funny because to me, this is the most exciting era because this is when I really became a fan. This is when the podcast starts. Like, yeah. To me, all my excitement about Star Trek really stems from this decade. But when you actually look at it on paper, there's nothing.
I know.
Like my notes, I have 2010 Star Trek Online launched.
Wow.
Which I have never played, by the way. I mean, I'm sure it's great. I don't know. I don't play video games. But
you started going to conventions this decade.
And, yeah, exactly. Like for me, this is like kind of like my birth as a Star Trek fan. But, you know, for best year, I ultimately went with last year, the 50th anniversary.
That was my pick as well.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't a lot of really cool things organized by Paramount or, you know, CBS.
And by a lot, do you mean any?
Yeah, but you had...
We got stamps.
There was enough things that came out in the year that were just exciting to talk about. You know, we had the 50th anniversary, kind of all the fans looking back on the years of all, you know, a lot of like media putting out their favorite lists of episodes. There was just Star Trek content being produced and retrospectives about the original series, which for me, I was falling, you know, in love all over again and rewatching episodes. You had
For the Love of Spock came out.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Which is a fascinating, you know, documentary as well. Look, Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah.
That was released, you know. And you and I, I think we had our best year yet for the podcast.
Of course, yeah. Like, we had a big, great time in Vegas.
Yeah, we got to go up on stage and do a panel at the largest Star Trek convention in the world.
Yeah, you had the TNG New Blue.
That's why people should come to realize that 2016 was the best year. Cam and I did a panel.
Obviously.
Yeah.
You also had the TNG Blu-ray box set, which came out for an affordable price, which I've been, like, you know, just diving through all the features. You had the announcement of Star Trek Discovery. Maybe 2017 will be the dark year when we see the results. Who knows? But at the point, 2016 was pretty exciting for that reason alone.
I agree. For all those reasons that you laid out there. But Cam, what would be your pick for the worst year of the decade?
For me, this was tough. I was going to say 2015, which is the year Leonard Nimoy died. But in a weird way, there was a lot of optimism and great emotion that came out of the death of Leonard Nimoy, in the sense that fans really, and not just the fans, I mean just the general public, began to really talk about how much Spock meant, how much Star Trek meant to culture. So even though it was this really sad event for fans, it really got people talking about how great Star Trek was.
And I also, I don't know how, I mean, of course it's sad for fans, but I mean, I almost felt as if people are celebrating Leonard Nimoy's, Nimoy's life more than, you know, mourning his death, which
exactly.
I thought was fantastic.
You know, Carrie Fisher, who we mentioned at the start, there's a lot more mourning going on for Carrie Fisher right now than I feel like there was for Nimoy, who people were just like, you know, he lived a hugely long life, satisfying life. My God, what this man accomplished.
Yeah.
You know, it just felt like there, it didn't feel as sad as I feel like fans feel now about Star Wars.
So what was your pick for worst year then?
So my worst, I ended up going with 2013, which is the year Into Darkness comes out. Now, for me, the excitement of Into Darkness coming out was very big. To me, when it ended, though, like all of that built up excitement I had for that franchise in 2009 was like dwindled by this movie. Like I walked out, honestly, not excited for any more of them. Like I was like, that was what it was.
You're saying that you'd rather call 2013 the worst year because a movie that weren't a particular big fan of came out, whereas if you look at a year like 2014, in which there's nothing at all.
Yeah,
really?
I
that makes
know,
no
like,
sense to me.
2014 was the year this podcast launched, so for me
that's why
like,
I, yeah that's why all... I put it as the worst year. I put 2014 as the worst year
that's
of this
fair.
Decade because there's no Star Trek at all.
Sure.
Yet you and I somehow felt inspired to start a Star Trek podcast. But I mean, look, give me bad Star Trek over no Star Trek.
I guess. But I just remember like in 2013 just feeling so deflated. But, I don't think I felt that way in 2014. I think in 2014 I came back around and was positive again.
You spent the previous four decades trying to talk about fan excitement, and then it comes down the very end your own personal feelings. Why aren't you consistent here?
I think because my feelings actually matter in this decade, whereas they never. My personal experience
fair
is
enough.
Completely irrelevant to the decades previous.
Okay, I can totally buy that.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Okay, Cam, as we close out this episode, you and I have to debate for just a moment or two.
Oh.
Decade.
Yeah.
What was the best decade? What was the worst decade? To me, I think it's kind of an easy pick, but you seem a little bit more tortured about this. Do you want me to go first and maybe you can jump in there?
Sure.
I say best decade, very easy, 1990s. No question about it. My favorite Star Trek film ever was released, Star Trek First Contact. You have the entire run of Deep Space Nine go on. You have the majority of both Voyager and Star Trek The Next Generation go. So many outstanding episodes. To me, there's no question that the 1990s, that was the peak of Star Trek. Cam, I can't imagine it ever being better than that. And I don't think people knew it at the time. You don't know it when, you know, you're living on the mountain instead of falling down into the valley, right?
Is that a saying? I've never heard that before.
I create sayings.
Is that to do with generations, with like Picard crawling through rocks?
No, I'm just going to say somebody said it in Darmok.
Or is this like Shatner climbing the mountain in Star Trek V?
Yeah. No, I'm Shatner falling off. You have to be my Spock and saving me with rocket boots.
No, yeah, ultimately I have to come down on the 90s because the 90s is such an exciting time because you have TNG, you have Voyager, obviously, which is very exciting. You have Deep Space Nine, you've got record numbers of Star Trek conventions across the world, an era I don't think we're going to go back to anytime soon.
I'm amazed to find out, like, there's, I think, an average of 150 conventions every single year.
Yeah.
That, like, Cam, we're lucky to get, what, 4 or 5 globally now?
Mm-hmm. I know.
Like, wow.
So, to me, the only other one that I would even consider is the 60s, with just the birth of Star Trek, and how exciting that must have been with color TV being new and just seeing this world for the first time is astonishing. But in terms of the mass amount of content, in terms of like the world that fans are able to engage with, the 90s is the greatest.
And I can't believe I forgot this. I mean, you have the 25th anniversary. You've got The Undiscovered Country. I mean, that's such a great film as well. Like, you've got just, I don't know. They'd say, energized.
Right. And you also have, of course, the birth of the internet. And so fans for the first decade ever are talking online about these episodes.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I was running my Star Trek Voyager website, of course.
Of course.
Yeah, that's what made it the best decade. So, Cam, then, what would be the worst decade? I think you might agree with me, but why don't you go first, sir?
I think probably the 2000s, even though it ends really strong. I think so.
Really?
I think so, because the 70s is maybe the more obvious choice, but that's when you have the
I guess I'm obvious because I'm going to the 1970s, because all you get is Star Trek the Motion Picture.
True, but you also get the birth of the Star Trek fan movement. They're gathering for the first time ever.
That all doesn't make it a greater decade than
it does. It's like this excitement.
The 2000s.
All new things are happening for the first time ever. Fans are congregating. There's like Roddenberry and all these stars are showing up at conventions for the first time.
What does that mean to me now?
It means nothing to you now. You know. Have the animated series coming out. The animated series.
Non-canon.
You know, you've got the motion picture at the end of the decade. I mean, I don't know. I feel like the Star Trek movement is moving throughout the 70s, whereas I feel like when you get to the 2000s, it's dying.
You'd say the 2000s is the worst. You'd say the 2000s was worse than the 2010s?
Yes, I think
What are you smoking, sir?
Well, I don't know. To me,
We've gotten in the 2010s is Star Trek Into Darkness and Star Trek Beyond.
Beyond is good.
And that's all we got.
You have the 50th anniversary. You've got...
Like, it wasn't that exciting.
I feel
Paramount and CBS really fell on their faces doing that.
I feel like there's the resurgence of sort of Star Trek and pop culture in 2015. With the Nimoy passing, that kind of carries into the 50th. Like, I feel like these 2 years have been really exciting in a lot of ways.
I would take the entire run of Star Trek Enterprise plus Star Trek Nemesis over the two films, the only two pieces of content that were released in the 2010s.
You're also forgetting, Star Trek Renegades.
Yeah, I apologize. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
So then I'm going to the 1970s. All you really get are the motion picture then.
The animated series.
Non-canon. All right, sir.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. I want to know what decades you think are the best and worst of Star Trek, because obviously we don't agree with each other, or we're probably with you.
So much so that I have to accuse Cam of being high on drugs.
I'm used to that, though. That's like after every recording session.
I know. Cam, you get nothing but abuse from me. Yeah. I do praise you for having such thick skin.
So, Tyler, what are we doing next week?
We will be having a very special guest on the show. He hasn't been on the show for a few months, but
not Ben Yong, right?
No, I don't think he's ever going to be guesting on the show again. But we're going to be welcoming back Carmen Cartanuto. We're going to be talking about Star Trek aliens that we want to see on Star Trek Discovery. That should be a fun one. I'm looking forward to some of your picks. I'm also looking forward to your reaction about some of my picks here, because some obvious, you know, obviously I'm the guy who goes for the obvious camp.
Of course.
And some not so obvious, so maybe right. I can subvert your expectations about me just a little bit.
Okay, you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Voyage Home 1986, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P-O-R-T-O-N, N as in Nemesis, baby, 2000s for the win.
So until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.